Hey, it's Errol. This is Play It Forward. A look at the unexpected changes endured by entertainers, writers, camera people, and all others affected, but not infected by the global invasion of the coronavirus. The goal is to feature two different types of episodes, the individual conversations, as well as a collected array of the entire picture. These are real people, real stories, the struggle to play it forward. Episode 24, There Is No Comedy in Truth. I would love to see the numbers of how many people on the planet are bombarded every day by family, friends, coworkers, and someone you happen to have met outside a pizza place that have developed a hardcore opinion about what the hell is going on. There's so much information being shoved into every corner of this social media-driven world that I'm convinced that the planet Saturn is leaving the universe because of so much confusion. I lost a lot of friends because of the last presidential election. What little were left are bailing because we don't see eye to eye with what we think the coronavirus is and how this situation should be played out. Taking a huge serious foot forward is comedian Steve Kramer, absolutely by far one of the most brilliant impersonation slash musician slash all around funniest comedians on the planet, which is why I was taken back by his invitation to meet someone that would give him COVID-19 so he can do his own research on how it hits him and beyond. First, I am not promoting what Steve has decided to come forward with, nor do I wish any other person to think they can do it, not just Steve. We're all in a moment of global uncertainty. I'm a journalist that's been introduced to a story. What you're about ready to listen to is the unedited full 60-minute conversation with a man that wants nothing more than the truth. Not conspiracy theories, not false research, propaganda answers, or politically driven protection devices keeping people in political offices. The truth.
Hello?
What are you doing?
Oh, not too much. Just, actually, I was literally just loading up an Arnold Schwarzenegger face map into my phone.
Don't you love having all this time on your hands right now?
Not really. I'd rather be out there, you know, doing work and stuff. I mean, it's not like the work that I do anyways is like important to this world. It's not like I'm curing cancer or anything, but
But in a way you are. As a comedian, that is the greatest medicinal on the planet. And so, yeah, I'll argue with you on that one.
Yeah, I actually, that's a good point. And I do actually agree with that. That's not much room to argue with you there. So yeah, it's true. I concede.
So I want to start off by basically saying, if anytime you want to dive out of this conversation, please do. I totally understand it. Or if you feel like after we're done talking, you say, don't even put that on the air. I totally respect you for that. But you put something up on Facebook that I received yesterday. I've never seen anything like it before in my life. What prompted all of this?
Well, you know, it's weird because there's so much going on out there, and there are so many different places to turn to for information. And I'm a big fan of Judge Judy, and she used to always say, you know, you got to listen to both sides and then make the best decision moving forward with the information that you have. Well, we've got like, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of news sources to get information from, and it can be, you know, exhausting trying to get as much information as you can to try to figure out where everything's at. And so, but there are certain places where you assume that they are sort of, that they don't have an agenda, or that they're supposed to be, you know, free of politics. And and then when they get something, when they get certain things so wrong, it's like, I hate being wrong, or I hate feeling like I've passed on information that was not correct. And there were certain, you know, things that the World Health Organization had passed on, it turned out to be completely not true.
Wow.
And so I see, you know, I see people frustrated on both sides. And I thought to myself, you know, I don't know anybody who has actually gone through it. And I keep seeing that, you know, that there's going to be restrictions on people who can go back to work. You won't be able to go back to work unless you have like this immunity certificate. That's sort of what they're doing in Germany.
Right.
And I keep seeing people, they'll post things like, you know, well, that's why we need tests. But a test will do nothing for me if I don't already have the virus. The test can't give me the virus or give me antibodies that I need to go back to work. And it's so funny because I would not want to hang out with myself as a teenager, because me as a teenager, I probably would have thought this was the coolest thing. I'd been like, cool, I can just stay at home. I don't have to go to work. But I reached a certain point in my life where I love to work. It's like, it's sort of therapeutic for me.
Right,
I love getting out there and creating. Yeah. And as a comic, you know, there are so many other, you know, factors that, you know, enter the equation as far as like being therapeutic, getting up on stage and, you know, being able to make people laugh. You know, it's almost that thing where the people that receive it, they have, it's therapeutic for them, but for the comic, it's therapeutic for us. For whatever reasons, whatever things that we've gone through in our lives, that that equals, you know, therapy for us.
Right.
And so there are so many reasons why it's great to be able to get out there and do that. But it's just, it's almost like with every day that passes by, and it's almost like a ticking time bomb. As a comic, I remember in 2008. When everything happened with the economy crashing, and there were so many comedy clubs that buckled, that
yep.
they weren't able to recover from it. And I remember what that was like as a comic. I mean, it really became difficult to get out there and, you know, get somebody on the phone. It was just very difficult to get booked. And, you remember when I was doing the shows with Pablo?
Yeah.
That was one of the great things about working with Pablo, was that I didn't even need a manager or anybody to make a phone call to get me booked. Just wherever Pablo went, I went with him as his feature.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't even have to mess with any of that. It was really nice. But a lot of these comedy clubs, you know, during that time period, if you didn't have an agent or a manager call for you, a lot of times they wouldn't even return the phone call.
Wow.
And so now I look at the situation, and I got a buddy here in Kansas City, Dustin Kaufman, and his comedy club. You know, I fear for him and his comedy club. It's just like every day that passes by, you know that the chances of a comedy club being able to stay open are less and less. So it's, you know, it's tough. So that's why I posted what I post. I was like, look, you know, just sitting on my ass and doing nothing is like the worst anxiety that I feel. You know, but if I can at least go out there and get the virus and do things in a safe way, quarantine myself and pass that information on to others, then at least people would feel like, okay, I don't know who to trust, but this is somebody that I know on Facebook, and I am watching him go through whatever he's going through. And then whenever it was all said and done, then I can actually, I'll have immunity or whatever I need for that certificate, so that I can go back to work whenever that time is. But also, you know, I would be more than willing to, you know, give my plasma, donate my plasma to people that do need the antibodies.
Right.
And, you know, it's funny. I actually, when I was younger and I had that mentality that I was talking about before, where I did not want to have a job. I did not want to work. I used to do pharmaceutical studies. And I have like thousands of hilarious stories from doing these pharmaceutical studies, where I was like a guinea pig, and that information was passed on. So they were constantly drawing my blood, and you know, and I had to do all these different studies, and everything was staggered by 5 minutes.
Yep.
I mean, I knew the whole protocol. I knew how to do everything. I would always crack these jokes. It's funny because I actually got a lot of my comedy kind of got started in these pharmaceutical studies. It's when I really kind of started to think about doing comedy, because I could always do voice impersonations. But I never really didn't think that there would be an outlet or a vehicle for me to like get that out there or get paid to do it. But I remember one particular study that I was doing where there was this one guy that was like much bigger than I was, and he was kind of a bully, kind of a dude, you know, and he just kept kind of messing with me. And I really wanted to, like, you know, just kind of punch him in the mouth and, you know, get into a scrap with him, but I needed the money so bad that I just sort of had to sit there and take it. Well, that doesn't sit well with me either. So I was like, I've got to get even with this guy somehow. So at nighttime, we would all be in the same dorm room, all of the guys, and the lights would go out at a certain time. And, you know, guys would be talking to whoever was next to their bed. Well, I knew exactly where he was sitting. I knew what he sounded like. So every time that he would say something, I would repeat exactly what he just said, but I would say it in a Bullwinkle voice, right? So he would be like, okay, I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Okay, I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. And everybody would just start laughing. Right. And then he'd be like, hey, who's saying that? Hey, who's saying that? And the more that he would get angry, and the more I repeated him, the more that people would just be dying laughing. So, like, I was always using my voices to, like, you know, sort of serve me in some purpose, whether it was for revenge or whatever. But that's kind of where a lot of the things started. So I've never had a fear of needles or, you know, being a guinea pig or trying things out. So it wouldn't be anything new for me anyways. In fact, I know that they're actually doing pharmaceutical studies for
Yes, they are. Yep. Yep.
I was trying to find some information on it yesterday. I would gladly volunteer and do that. Something like that would feel better than just sitting around waiting for others to sort of come rescue me. I'm just not, that doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah, off the air, I'll give you somebody that approached me. I'll give you their name and so we'll definitely do that. So, because I don't want the whole world to be calling them up or anything like that, but off the air, I'll give you the name.
Sweet. Yeah, that would be great. But I'd love to do that and participate.
I do want to know what voice was going through your head while you were typing out that message on Facebook. And the reason why is because there are many times that I say some stuff on Facebook that I have to eat my own foot. And it's like, no, all I was trying to do was motivate people to think a different way. I was trying to get people to see that, man, your one-sidedness isn't equal to who we think you are as a person. And that, for instance, like this morning, it's like you were talking about, you know, there's somebody on the right side that is saying this is a conspiracy, blah, 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 blah. They put up all the information in the world. And all I did was I wrote to them. And I said, I'll tell you what, be patient. People are going to get back to work. Everything's going to be fine. Just be patient right now. But what I want to do, though, in 3 weeks to maybe even 2 months after everybody goes back to work, I want that interview. If you're right, you're going to be a hero. If you're wrong, I still got the story. And that's all I want. I want the story is what I want. What's really going on?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. And I almost feel like there are so many people out there that's really what they want more than anything. It's almost like, it's funny because we reached a certain level where I was seeing almost the exact same thing being said by both sides, but just from different angles. Like, right, they were both saying something doesn't smell right about this. There's, I think on one side they were saying that it was a total cover up because the government was not including all of the amount of bodies that were actually dying. And the other side was saying that they were including way too many. Those on the right were saying, well, a lot of the people that had died actually had, they died of heart failure, but because they had COVID-19, that they were listing it as that they died of COVID-19. But the people on the left were saying, oh no, it's way worse than it is. There's actually thousands of body bags lined up outside and the government just doesn't want us to know because they don't want us to know how bad it is. And, you know, so you have this distrust on both sides. I don't know that I've ever seen it this bad. But I think it's funny because I love sports. Mm-hmm. And they have this saying where winning cures all. And it's so true. When a team is winning, like, nobody's arguing with each other. But as soon as you start losing a few games in succession, then everybody starts pointing at each other and blaming each other.
Get out of my house.
And it's exactly, exactly. And it's kind of the same thing with in a country. when everybody's working, everybody's so busy that they can't even really get on Facebook. They can't read a lot of the things that are being put out there. A lot of it is clickbait. A lot of it is conspiracy theories.
Right.
And so that kind of stuff gets people riled up. But the more people are at work focusing on what they should be working on, the less problems. So when everybody's sort of stuck at home, you know, watching Tiger King for hours, I mean, you're sort of setting yourself up watching endless hours of, you know, guess what, motherfucker?
Yeah.
Only
to see that TMZ put out a special to that special, an hour-long version of Life After Tiger King.
And who can blame them with all of the all the people watching? By the way, I hope I didn't just get you in trouble by saying, I hope that was okay for me to say. Hope the cursing wasn't
you're fine.
Too much.
You're fine.
Okay, sorry about that. But yeah, that was about 7 hours of my life I can't get back to Tiger King. That was just some of the wildest, craziest things. It's funny because I was actually watching it with somebody, and they wanted me to come away from it, but I couldn't stop. I just kept watching it all the way to the end. I just found it so fascinating.
Now, an interesting question that comes to mind when you posted that on Facebook yesterday, where you actually invited somebody who may have COVID-19 to give it to you. Yesterday was also the day that Zuckerberg came through and said that Facebook will take information about COVID-19 that they don't feel feasible and they'll take it off. Are you still up on Facebook? Have they gotten to you yet?
I actually did take I logged out or. What do you call it? Deactivated my Facebook this morning.
Okay.
Just because, for me, like, you can only take so much stress of, like, seeing everybody yelling at each other.
Boy, isn't that the truth?
Yeah, and I was like, you know what, man? I just need a little break for a little while, because I felt like I needed to be, I sort of needed time to recuperate for myself and have a clear head. Is when you read stuff for so long, so often, that it kind of starts to wear you down, and it kind of has an effect on your psyche.
Yeah, it does.
I just deactivated it, and I just need like a timeout for myself. But I'm glad that you brought that up because, you know, I am an unabashed, absolute, all the way First Amendment freak. I mean, I swear by it. I wholeheartedly believe in it. I think it's so important, especially for comics, but especially in times like this when you don't know who to believe. And I know that there were some stories a couple weeks ago about the virus starting in a Wuhan lab. And I think it was YouTube, started taking down and started like nixing these stories,
yep,
saying that they were conspiracy theories. So they weren't letting them get through. And Facebook may have been doing the same thing. I'm not sure. But now it turns out, based on these cables that were released from the State Department somewhere, now it's like this growing consensus that they actually believe that it was in a lab. And so, regardless of where it happened, we don't know where it happened. And when you have certain companies like YouTube, Facebook, shutting certain stories down, like that, I don't want to see. I would much rather see all of these different conspiracy theories out there and people be able to make an intelligent decision on their own rather than to have, you know, whether it's YouTube or Facebook or the government, you know, sort of determining which information we get to see. That bothers me. I'd rather, you know, even the way that it is now, everybody yelling at each other and everybody's got their own theories and different things like that. I would rather it be like that. I would rather me take a little bit of a breather and then come back to it when I'm ready, rather than, I don't want to shut anybody down. I don't want to shut any side down. I don't want to. I want as much information as possible.
Right.
I just wish that there were certain places that we could count on to trust a little more than what's out there.
Do you think that the reason why we're not getting all the information or why we're getting pieces parts is because if the true information came through, it could cause chaos?
I've thought about that. I kept saying in the beginning when they originally shut down the NBA, there are certain things in life that make my, you know, sort of my antenna go up. Anytime you have a multi-billion dollar, you know, sports entity completely shut down, like there's so much money that's going to be lost by these owners,
yep,
that for them to agree to close everything down, I'm like, okay, this is like getting serious now. When I saw Trump and Cuomo actually complimenting each other and working together, that freaked me out. I was like, oh, maybe it's not business as usual. And so sometimes I do think that maybe there's stuff out there that we don't know, that maybe they're just not telling us, because at the end of the day, you know, a lot of this stuff just doesn't make sense.
Well,
and,
like
not only that,
like the stimulus check does not make sense to me. I mean, I'm sorry, but I feel guilty that I'm just going to be part of what taxpayers are going to be complaining about. And it's not that I don't want it, and it's not that I'm not going to use it. I just know I'm not going to Walmart with it.
Yeah, and not only that, but I actually read somewhere, and you can check on this and verify it, but I either read or I heard on the radio that the stimulus check, just the first one that passed, is going to actually end up costing each American around $6,000.
Oh my God.
And I seriously doubt that anybody would go get a loan from the bank for $1,200 if you had to end up paying $6,000 total. I mean, the interest on that is just absolutely outrageous. And no one would do that in their right mind and think, oh, I just made a good decision. So it's this weird, it's this really awkward position that you're in where it's like, okay, I sort of have to take this money. I'm forced to take this money to use it to get by right now. But I know that it's only making things worse in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's like a really weird catch 22. That you're sort of stuck in.
Yeah, because the one thing that people are not talking about is that, and this is where I've been really trying very hard to be humble about it, but at the same time, you've got to be able to say something about it. And even on my radio shows today, you know, we can't do anything until we've had 14 days of down numbers in every state. Okay, well, why are they still playing basketball at the school outside? Why are they still in their golf carts playing golf? It doesn't matter if they're in separate golf carts. They're still at the tee, and they're still buddying up. And we're not going to get 14. See everything. And I think you and I can relate on this. We lost a lot of jobs. I mean, when that day came, I mean, I lost everything.
Yeah.
And I can't go back to work until they give us clearance to go back to work. And I'm an entertainer as well. I can't go back to work.
Yeah. And it's not only that, but the part that really bothers me is that I don't, and this again goes to the First Amendment, it really bothers me how it's almost like you're not allowed to have the uncomfortable conversation. It is an uncomfortable conversation, but you have to have it. If you're going to be honest with people, you have to say, you know, if you have to sort of weigh the, you know, if X number of people pass away from the coronavirus and we shut everything down, but then we stay closed down for so long that everything goes into a deep depression, mm-hmm, that lasts for months, if not years, like what happened, you know, like 100 years ago.
Yep, 1942.
Yes. If things happen like that, then you have to ask yourself, if, you know, millions of people end up being affected to the point to where they die of starvation or die of malnutrition or, you know, you sort of, it's an uncomfortable conversation to have, but you have to have it. You know, it's a fine line that you have to walk, but you have to say, you know, at what point do we consider the amount of lives that are going to be lost from this shutdown? And if there's going to be lives lost either way, you have to figure out you know, the best way to move forward where you're going to have the least amount of lives lost. Because I don't think people understand. There's a lot of people that I talk to. I don't think that they understand how many people are going to be affected in such a negative way from completely shutting the economy down. Mm-hmm. And,
well, that
you know, it's scary.
I had a quote in my daily writing today, and my quote was, and it was kind of scary, you have to want to go back to work in order to get America back to work. You have to want to. And I'm not seeing people that want to get back to work.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I wrote what I wrote yesterday, because I keep seeing people go on television talking about we're going to have to, you know, keep things closed down and keep everybody quarantined until we get a vaccine in like a year to 18 months.
I can't survive that long.
Nobody can. I mean, there would be riots. There would be looting. There would be total chaos. I mean, you just can't keep people bottled up. And the problem with that for me is that every time I see people telling me to stay quarantined and just stay at home, it's always coming from people who have a buttload of money.
Yep.
You know, athletes, politicians, people in the media that make so much money that this doesn't affect them in the same way. You know, they could probably go years with the money that they have in the bank before ever being affected. And they're literally telling people, you know, that live paycheck to paycheck, you know, just stay inside, stay in your home for, you know, a year to 18 months. It's so tone deaf that it's shocking that, you know, that there are people that live in a bubble that don't understand how this affects the average ordinary American.
Well, that's why I wish, you know, like the news group, CNN, ABC, NBC, somebody in the news world, if they would just start telling the story of, okay, this is where we presently stand with the COVID-19. This is what's going on. We still don't have a solution. This is the true picture. If we don't work harder on getting a solution here, this is what America is going to look like. And they need to start showing pictures that make people go, I'm not going there. They don't have the internet there. I'm not going there because I won't have a smartphone. And that's one of the questions that I brought up on my radio show. What's going to be the very first thing that you get rid of because you can't afford it anymore? Is it going to be the smartphone? Is it going to be your internet or the gas in your second car?
Yeah, these are tough decisions that people are going to have to start making. And by the way, I don't trust the government after what happened in the last stimulus, where at the last minute they decided to let's throw in these extra deals for like the Kennedy Center, when the Kennedy Center actually already knew that they were going to lay people off. I mean, that should be like a scam that people should be looking into. There should be, I completely opposed the first stimulus way back in 2008, both of them. Because it was almost like they were bailing out the banks, and you know, it was this too big to fail, which almost seemed more to me like, you know, too small to matter. And so they sort of focused on these bigger corporations. And so I didn't like that. I didn't like the way that it went down, but hey, whatever, it happened. Well, this time it did seem at least like they were thinking about the average American sending out these checks. So I'm like, okay, if they can spend the smallest amount of money to get us some money, to get us by, I'm willing to go through with that. I'm willing to do my part, and it's not socialism. Consider it the government's, consider it a, what do they call that? Like when you do a lawsuit, a settlement.
Consider it a settlement
in the government for the irreparable damage done to me and my business. I'll take your little tiny settlement, and I'll do what I can to get by, but you got to get us back to work as soon as possible. Well, when the first stimulus passed, and then they threw in all these other things for these other companies, and I'm like, that doesn't have anything to do with us that we're trying to get by. So I don't trust them to continue to do that for the next year to 18 months. And I know so many people that feel the same way that I do. They're like, I would rather, you know, risk dying and going to work and, you know, living like a normal American than to curl up in a ball and just wait for someone to come rescue me for a year to 18
right.
months.
Right. Is that what led to the Facebook post? I mean, because, I mean, now that you've taken it down, did people come after you and say things, crazy things, and, you know, saying, basically say, what do you think you're doing? You could actually be somebody who's going to transfer this to somebody else?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, some people said that I was, you know, they called me foolish. They all, you know, they all talk about, I know this person and that person. And I feel bad for anybody who has been affected by it. But I hear so many different stories
right.
From so many different people that, you know, I honestly feel for people who don't, they want to know. It's like there's this thirst for knowledge. I don't really know anybody. All I hear are these stories, all these, you know, anecdotal stories of this person said this person passed away, or I know this person that passed away. Well, I don't know if that person that passed away had any kind of heart complications or if they had any health issues. That's what the World Health Organization has been telling us. You know, according to the World Health Organization, the only people that are affected by this, that this is what they've been saying from the get-go, is that, you know, that the people that are affected by it are generally older people,
yep.
People that have like heart complications, asthma, respiratory problems. And so the COVID-19 just sort of exacerbates the problem. I've heard stories where the respirators that they get put on actually make matters worse. And
yep.
That's why so many people that go on the respirators that they actually end up passing away. But I've heard that for, you know, overall, a lot of the younger people have not been affected. And even when this whole thing started, I got yelled at. I can't say I got yelled at, but you could tell people were hostile towards me.
Verbally, on Facebook yelled at. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. They came after you.
Yeah. Yeah. And when this whole thing started, I made a suggestion. I said, you know, instead of closing down the NBA and sports where older people aren't going to, why not close down, you know, bingo halls and cruise ships? Because this is where all the old people are going to. Why don't we quarantine the older people, people that we know that that have health issues, and we can show them how much we care about them by bringing food to them. We can bring supplies to them, whatever they need. We can take care of them in a safe way. But the rest of us can continue working so that we at least have a vibrant economy so that we can, you know, things don't shut down, because like the economy is going to affect, it's going to be a chain reaction of things to where they're in a lot of times there won't be enough money for supplies to get it to the people that need it. There's so many things that having a really bad economy or an economy shut down will affect people that they don't even think about until later on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fun to sit there and say, oh, you know, well, who cares? You know, we'll just stay at home and we'll figure things out. No, I mean, if you understand anything about the economy and how it works and why it's so important to keep it moving, then, you know, you want to do everything in your power to keep it going, because there are so many people that will be helped by it, by keeping it going.
Yeah, see, we're already practicing to be even stricter with what we're doing. And the way we do that is that we will search the local restaurants that have deals, specials, and stuff like that for families. And then it's become a game to us to where we will stretch that one meal into three nights. Because if we don't start practicing, then when it really does happen, I'm going to be very hungry.
Yeah, it's scary to think about. Like, in the beginning, it wasn't that bad, because they're like, you know, they were just talking about, you know, it lasting a month.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, we can get through a month. But then when I started seeing politicians go on television and, you know, government officials talking about a year to 18 months, that's when I really started getting nervous. And I'm like, this is going to get really bad, because, number one, I don't have that much toilet paper. And number two, I don't even know. It's almost like it seems like their restrictions keep getting worse and worse as well. You know, it's like they originally said, okay, only a certain amount of people can go. But now they're like passing these restrictions saying you can't go outside unless you have a mask on.
Right. That's here now. That's here now.
Yeah. Now you're actually
Mecklenburg County. Yep.
You're on the East Coast. Yep. I knew that they were doing it in New York, but I didn't know they were doing it up elsewhere.
Yeah, because they're trying to prevent it.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, you hope that things are getting better after being, you know, on lockdown for so long, but it seems in some ways when you hear things like that, that it's perhaps getting worse. And look, I mean, if people have to wear masks to go back to work, then, you know, okay, it's annoying, but, you know, whatever you got to do. It's the part about not being able to go to work if you haven't contracted it and you don't have the antibodies. And it's like, okay, how do I get it? How do I get the antibodies?
Yeah, because isn't that what they do with the flu? Do every time we get a flu shot, are they not giving us the flu so that we can build up the immune system?
That's exactly what it is. You know, so that's why they say that until they get a vaccine. I've actually heard from some people that, like, if you get a flu shot, that it actually does help a little bit. Who knows? In fact, I know somebody that actually went and got the flu shot that never gets the flu shot. They hate vaccines, but just to prevent themselves from getting anything, they went and got the flu shot.
Right.
But I don't know. I think that, you know, if I were to contract something, if I had it, you know, and something did happen to me, I would at least be in good spirits. I would at least have a good, you know, my mind would be in the right place if something did happen, and I wouldn't feel bad about that. Mm-hmm. I really am nervous about not just my psyche, but everybody else's psyche.
That's the big issue right now. Yep, that's the big issue right now.
You know, it's funny because when I grew up, I actually suffered from, like, these self-esteem issues. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I started doing comedy that I sort of felt like I had found my place in this world and something that I was good at. And so I would always enjoy getting out there and working. But if I can't do comedy, if ever I'm going through a tough time, I will just, like, create something, or I'll be productive, because that really helps to boost my self-esteem. It helps me to feel good about myself. It makes me feel like I'm doing my part. And so being able to get out there and work is so crucial, not just to me, but I feel like for so many people, for everybody. I feel like it really does wonders for their psyche, and to not have that, to have that taken away from them.
Well, that leads me to a question then, because it makes me want, I mean, and be open. So to place that up on Facebook, was that the comedian on stage where you have been given that full right to say something just to kind of create that shock and awe? And now all of a sudden people started reacting and you're going, oh, shit. What did I just start here?
Oh, no, I knew. In fact, I sat there and stared at what I had written for about 5 minutes before I hit the send button, before I hit the post button, because I knew that it was going to stir shit up. I absolutely knew it. I knew what I was, setting myself up for. But I've written posts like this before, and if you're like one of these people that, like, you are, some people are into clickbait. Some people like to stir up shit and get conversation going. Well, this was not bad for me. I knew that's what was going to happen, but I really, honestly, I wanted to just, like, put my feelings out there, like what I was truly feeling. And I knew that if I actually could do this somehow, and then once I have it, okay, now I've had it, I've gotten over it, now I don't have that fear of getting it.
Right.
What's it going to be like? I'm past that, and I would feel so much better having had it. I know that sounds crazy to some people. They're like, you don't want that. You don't really want it. It's the worst thing ever. It's terrible. But having had it, and now I can move forward, I know I don't have to worry about getting it, and now I can actually donate plasma to people right. that need it. I would have done that. I could actually go help people move supplies to places where they need it. I know in
right.
Michigan they need so much supplies. I could actually go in there and say, I've already had it. I have the antibodies. I can't give it to somebody else, so I'm not going to spread it. So I can actually be here helping people. I can help transfer supplies to people that need it in areas. Doing that, even not making money, would still feel better than just sitting at home
waiting for the storm. Wait, you know, that to me, I've been comparing it to a hurricane. It's like that for what is it, 14 days before a hurricane hits, you know, every news channel in the world is saying it could hit here, it could hit here. And you sit there and it just mentally beats the living hell out of you. And then it misses you. And you're going, I'm not getting those 14 days back.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it's funny because sometimes just getting something off your chest and saying what you feel feels better to just do that. But I found it very interesting how by just expressing how you feel to some people is almost like
it's a death sentence.
I mean, you would have thought that I had, you know, I had just slaughtered a bunch of people.
Yep.
Because people were so enraged by it, just by that, expressing that. And the only explanation that I have is that it didn't fit their narrative. Mm-hmm. And I don't really care about narratives at this point. I care about, I understand the meaning. I know like what being productive and working has done for me. I used it to self-medicate to make myself feel better. I would work myself to death in the past whenever I'd gone through things that were so tragic. Like that's all I had was my work. But it always helped. It always saved me. So I understand how important work is to people. And I understand how devastating it is when people can't go to work.
Well, see, and that's so interesting that you say that, because I have a channel on iHeartRadio that is 100% dedicated to creativity being an addiction. And so for the past 5 weeks, I have put so much focus on how creativity is under attack right now. It doesn't matter if you're a banker or if you're stocking the shelves at Kmart. The thing is that you still use the energy of creativity to move you forward. And right now it's under attack. And that's what this whole entire channel is about. It's about learning how to understand what creativity and the lack of it is going to do to your mind, body, and soul. And if you think that you're under a storm now, we're just getting started.
Yeah, and that's why the whole thing with, with the First Amendment, for me, it almost has to be an absolute, or as absolute as you can get. I mean, I know there are certain restrictions. You can't yell, you know, fire in a crowded theater. But like it seems like every single day they come up with new words that you can't use. They're constantly restricting the things that people can say, and that's hard on comedians. That's hard on writers. Writers should stand up to that more than anything, because you know whatever is okay to say today won't be okay to say tomorrow.
Right.
If we head down that slippery slope, and as a comic. As a writer, you know, can you imagine? I'll see these comedians who will literally tweet things, and they'll be in support of not, restricting speech in certain areas. And I'm like, how can you, of all people, when words are your tools, can you imagine a carpenter going to work and petitioning to not use hammers or nails? It makes no sense to me. Comedians and writers should be on the front lines defending the First Amendment, and sometimes it amazes me when I see them fighting so hard to restrict free speech. It's a slippery slope. And I hate to see it happen.
That reminds me of a conversation I was having with Steve, who is the owner and operator and main creator of Podcast Magazine. And he and I were locked into this great conversation. And then, you know, from out of left field, I go, do you think we can help curb some of the cussing that's on podcasting? And he goes, I hope not. It's freedom of speech, Arrow. It's freedom of speech. And it woke me up.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, the sad part about it, too, is that, and this is an issue that is, that I try to talk about with people. I try to talk about issues that I know have been affected by both, on both the left and the right. Because I try to find common ground that we can all get behind. Mm-hmm. And there are politicians on both the left and the right who have literally taken money from China, and who is a communist country, they have literally infiltrated so much politics in the United States that they are now using their influence to, you know, whether it's through Twitter or Facebook, to restrict speech. And I know that that's common practice in China, but that's not even supposed to be anything that we even consider in America. That's why so many people would escape to America, because they loved having that freedom of speech. The freedom of creativity is affected so much by that. I really don't care about, as a comic, I honestly try to talk about this on stage, where I say, I try to make fun of everybody. And if I leave anybody out, I honestly feel like I'm saying that person is not on my level. They're not equal to me.
Right.
You know, and it's like, I don't feel sorry for you. I think that you're just as equal as I am. I make fun of myself. I make fun of everybody. It's when you start saying these certain groups are off limits. Okay, you can make fun of everybody else, but this group is off limits, that you really hurt the cause. I've seen people in comedy clubs where they'll literally laugh at every joke all the way through, but as soon as it hits their particular group, now they're offended. They now they want to get up and walk out.
Yep.
And that's, I mean, that's so hypocritical to me. Whereas with me, I try to be as across the board as possible. I try to stay consistent. And I find that if you just try to stay consistent, then you really are applying equality to everybody. And I would hope that that's what all that you would want to do. No matter who you are in this country, I would respect someone who says, I'm going to treat you exactly as I would treat everybody else. I would respect that.
So now I've got the big question. The big question is that we know that you talked about it on Facebook, about how you would like to be infected by somebody with COVID-19, and because you want to be able to tell the story. When we first started this conversation, I mentioned to you that I have a research group, which I'm going to give you the number once we hang up. What would serve your soul or your path better, to get the COVID-19 or to take this phone number from this research group and help that way rather than the other way?
Well, isn't the research group going to give me the COVID-19?
I don't know.
And get it somehow?
I don't know. I just know that they've approached me.
Well, if the research company would actually give me the COVID-19, then that would be great, because at least I have doctors around and it can be monitored and it can still serve the same purpose. And I know that it would be done in a professional way. And I can still report back to people and say, this is what I went through. This is what it was like. Because I don't want to do anything that is going to, for example, if I did it on my own and then things didn't turn out good and I had to go to a hospital, I would hate to have to take up an extra hospital bed for somebody else that's trying to be there that didn't get it on purpose. So if I did do it through a research company, that would probably be the best. And, but I stand by everything that I said. I still would do it. And the fact that I have people on there telling me that I would be a damn fool to do it, they don't understand me. If they cared about me, they would not be telling me those things, because that only makes me want to do it more.
Yeah.
Because I want to prove them wrong now.
Right.
And I just am not very good at, curling up in the fetal position and just sucking my thumb and just hoping for a miracle
at any given time. And here's what that first came to me when I was reading it. And I'm a total nutball. So what happens is that when I read that, the first thing I thought was, the person that would give you COVID-19, I pictured a woman with a needle full of heroin putting it into the arm of John Belushi. Do you see where I'm coming from on this? It's like, are we caring for the person that gave it to you? Because what about life after something, if it went wrong with you?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I can see that. But, the funny thing is that I'm at a really unusual fork in the road.
Right.
Because when you do comedy, where it didn't used to be this way, but now it's gotten to where there really are restrictions. You do have to watch what you say. You have to bite your tongue sometimes. But what happens when you reach the point of no return, where you know there's going to be so many comedy clubs that aren't going to come back? Will there ever be comedy again? if this goes on for so long? Will all the main corporations have to, you know, be forced to shut down?
Right.
You know, how bad is it going to be? Well, if there's no comedy, if there are no repercussions for what I say, then why not just say exactly how I feel? And if going through whatever that is, at the end of the day, no matter what happens to me, I still feel better about myself, and I still have my mind when I go. That's a much better way to go out.
Well, your quote was just mind-blowing in the way that you said that you would rather go out standing up than on your knees. And do you know that took maybe an hour to finally sink in? You're a stand-up comedian. Is that where you were coming from when you said that?
Absolutely.
It took an hour for that to sink in, and I'm going, oh my God, I know exactly where he's coming from.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like, you know, a lot of times that's sort of the position that we're putting as comics. You know, when we sort of cower, I shouldn't say cower because I know a lot of people feel like they're making business decisions and they got to keep putting food on the table, but sometimes you have to stand up for what's right. And there is no greater asset to stand-up comics than the First Amendment. And the ability to say, you know, exactly what's on your mind. And I've said it 1,000 times, you know, I would rather have somebody tell me the cold, hard truth, even if it hurts, than to lie to me and tell me what I want to hear. I mean, you're never going to grow if you just have people tell you, you know, oh, you're great, your show is fantastic. You know, tell me the things that I didn't do well. Tell me the things that I need to improve on. That's the only way you're going to grow. And so,
you saying that right away, I want to say, so what were the comedians saying in 1918 when this Spanish flu, which started in the United States, suddenly grew across the world? Nobody's talking about that. It started here. And all of a sudden, to this day, even last week, the Charlotte Observer was reporting the people that died during it that nobody knew about. I mean, they're still digging up the history of something that took place, over almost 100 years ago.
Yeah, and I believe the numbers for that, I believe there were millions of people. And I think it was even millions. Was it millions of Americans that had passed away? I know there were millions.
It's a big number. A big number.
Yeah, super big number. And the I also, another big part of this that really bothers me is that, you know, on average, per the Center for Disease Control, more than 7,000 Americans die every single day. Yeah. Approximately 2,000 die of heart failure. You know, there's a long list of reasons that Americans die every single day. And a lot of times, you get this feeling that the media focuses on certain things to people riled up, get them hyped up, sort of pit one against the other because it sells, you know, people watch, they make money. There's money. There's so much money to be made in getting in hysteria, getting people riled up, mm-hmm. getting people focused on television. You know, it's like that old Jerry Springer deal. Everybody wants to watch the train wreck.
Yeah.
And to me, it just, a lot of times it's not very, it's not good journalism. It's sort of pushing the narrative.
Yeah, because it always kills me when they're sitting there, they're really deep into a story. I mean, it's heartfelt. You're sitting there emotionally connected to it. And all of a sudden they say, we'll be right back. And then you hear, blah, 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 car sale is going on now. By the way, did you know you can get a mattress for 80% off? I'm going, what the hell just happened here? You know?
I think about that all the time. That's a good point. Yeah, no, I totally agree. But, you know, I honestly believe that your job is to report the facts and the numbers, but also you don't want to get, I mean, what's the difference in yelling fire in a crowded theater? The difference between that or going on what's supposed to be a responsible news organization and telling people the kind of numbers that are going to get them nervous and freaked out and paranoid. And, you know, there's no difference in my opinion, because, you know, when they do talk about the amount of people that have passed away, they really should include the per capita. They should talk about, I don't like it when they talk about America has passed, you know, this certain country. We have way more people than that particular country. So, you know, you should report things like per capita. You should include as much information so that people can process that information and that they have as much perspective to move forward, because if there's not a need to panic, why get people in a panic?
Right.
Why make matters worse?
See, and that's where I've really, in the past couple of weeks, where I'm starting to go, I don't understand what's going on here, but something needs to shift. They will only go to a live presidential press conference for only so long. And then what's happening is that they get what they want, and then they go back to their newscast. Why'd you even check in? If you're going to be a soundbite generation kind of news organization, why don't you wait till afterwards and then put up his soundbites? Get exactly what you need to have him say, and then come back, you know, when you've got it all produced. But if you're going to cut out of something that I've involved and invested my time into, I want to see the whole thing. Don't just give me a pieces part here.
I agree with that 100%, because, you know, it's not fair that you have to be exposed to places like Facebook, where you're getting, you know, so much bad information, and you have to be exposed to so many conspiracy theories, and you're hearing all of this negativity. And the idea is, when you tune into a news conference, that's the place where you're supposed to be getting like the solid information,
right,
and the different ideas and people talking about things. That's where you're supposed to get your hope and feel like things are actually coming together. So to limit that amount of information, it sort of defeats the purpose, and it kind of makes things worse. I want to hear as much information as possible from the people that are in charge, the people that know what they're doing, so that at least it gives me comfort that they are doing something. Because if you don't get to hear that, and all you hear is everything on Facebook, the negativity, the conspiracy theories,
boom, boom, boom.
I mean, we'll just deteriorate. Our minds will, you know, just go to a place of darkness that will be very, very difficult to recover.
And you know what? And in that vein, they announced a couple weeks ago that alcoholism is up 55%. You don't think there's a new epidemic on the horizon? Oh, yes, there is.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are a lot of chain reaction events that are going to happen from this. That, you know, you don't want for the cure to be worse than the actual disease.
The actual disease.
And I worry about that all the time.
Yep. Dude, you're going to have to keep in touch with me about this. This conversation can't end here. We've got to, you know, because I want to know how you're thinking, where you're going to be growing from and stuff like that. And I want listeners to, you know, to kind of tap into what you're doing. I don't want this to be a one-time thing.
Yeah, I'll be more than happy to talk to you anytime, and especially if I do actually get it at some point, I'll keep you posted on everything that happens. But I also want your listeners to know that there are multiple sides to Steve Kramer. I am not like this when I'm up on stage. I actually come alive.
I've seen you. I've experienced this.
I would sell zero tickets if this is how I was up on stage. No, I do a bunch of impressions. I play the guitar. I do a lot of different music. And so, you know, please don't let this interview have anything to do with your decision about ever coming to see me at a show, because normally I'm selling tickets, and it's about, things are great, and it's my job to get people to the show. But I honestly feel like there's a time to be honest and direct with people and be yourself and be completely vulnerable. And I feel like that's my responsibility right now, is to communicate what I'm actually feeling and what I'm actually going through.
Isn't that comedy in itself? Because I'm a firm believer, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not laughing necessarily at the funny lines. I'm laughing because you set me up, because I can relate with what you're saying, and all of a sudden you come in with your inflection and you seize the deal.
You know, that's actually very difficult for me to answer, because when I'm up on stage, it's a side of me that I, in some ways, didn't even know existed.
Wow.
Because when you're on stage, you have to have this confidence like that you know that you're funny, and you know, yep. like, because you have it, like, the person you are on stage would make a terrible friend, because can you imagine being out to eat and somebody all of a sudden tries to, have a conversation with you, and you shut them down like a heckler? Like, nobody wants to be friends with that guy, but that's how you have to be on stage, and you have to carry this, like, tremendous amount of confidence. And when I was growing up, I never had that confidence. So it's almost like when I'm off stage, I'm sort of Clark Kent, but when I'm on stage, I'm Superman.
Yep.
I didn't know that that person existed. So I don't understand the psychological elements of it and how it works and how it's able to work. And to be honest with you, so many people that I know from high school and when I was growing up would never have imagined me being able to do the things that I do on stage. It's almost like this new part of me that I didn't even know existed. Okay. So, but I do honestly feel like, I've always felt like there's a time to make jokes. There's a time. I don't crack jokes at funerals. You know, when it's time to be serious, I am always serious. And then when it's time to come alive and make people laugh, I certainly have the ability to do that.
I'm Arrow, and that's Podcrashing.